Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And welcome to the AEW All Out Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by Ben Roy Turner from What Culture to review everything that happened on last night's pay-per-view AEW All Out. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Rampage, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Ben Roy Turner. The Dadley boys
hello there. Are
enjoying some well-earned rest. They were up all night writing about All Out. But, Ben Roy, there is only one place to start, and I know it's a bit of a gimmick of mine, but this message is all over social media. The moment I woke up this morning, I couldn't help but read, "Was this the best pay-per-view ever?"
I think it might be up there, you know, definitely in the realm of AEW, and that's a high bar as it is. But trying to think and trying not to put like recency bias to it, but it was almost perfect in a way where we started off with some decent just wrestling. Going into this, I felt that there wasn't a lot of build for a lot of matches. There was like a few matches that had like some decent build, but we sort of had a few things like the Miro and Kingston match, which kind of felt thrown together, but came together at the last moment on like a Rampage, and was it Get These Nuts or along those lines. And when you think about it, one of the biggest builds here we had was to the re-debut of No BS, but then like with the Paul White for those people, of course, and even though the main event, which was always going to be a banger, Christian and Omega, which I won't jump all the way there yet, but even though that was sort of like everyone kind of like knew what was going to happen with that match, and then what happened after, it's just like, well, that's just nuclear, what's going on?
I don't know how to feel about this. I was talking about it on the news this morning in terms of the fact of I'm more often the one who gets carried away with these sorts of things. I'll come off the back of a bloody fast lane and go, was that the best fast lane we've ever seen, or the best WWE pay-per-view they've ever put on or something? And it's like, pump the brakes a little bit. So I said, I think I'm going to give it a few days. But like you say, for something that didn't, like it, like you say, it had anticipation. It's CM Punk's re-debut. There's, you know, strong rumors, strong suggestions that we're getting Bryan Danielson showing up. Like you say, we're getting Kenny Omega versus Christian. We're getting some bonkers. I mean, you put the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros in the steel cage, you can almost guarantee carnage. Maybe not exactly what we got, but still. It was sort of weird because it went in with huge expectations on the one hand, but some of the others, you were just like you say, like, oh, I'm sure Miro and Eddie Kingston will be all right. But 2 weeks ago, we didn't know about it. And you were going in at least a few weeks ago going, it's not exactly Hangman Page winning the world title, is it? So
yeah,
there is that. I mean, I think I'm going to have to go back and watch it again. But I got very, very giddy and carried away watching this. And like you say, in terms of the final moments of a pay-per-view influencing the way you look back on it, I don't think you can get any better than what happened. But we'll get to that in due course.
It all came together. And I, especially when I watch pay-per-views alone, I mean, sometimes I have a little cheeky close my eyes for 15, 20 minutes here and there. None of that at all. I was glued to the screen, even when I thought it was the calm down, sort of like, you know, the main event. And I say play by numbers. Even that kept me to the very end. And it's one of those shows where you find it hard to go to sleep afterwards because the adrenaline is pumping that much.
Yeah, I think it's AEW's credit. I mean, it's still like it was still a long show, nearly 4 hours, but they certainly didn't do what's happened in the past. And that is, and Sidge talked about this a lot in the build, and that is give matches that only needed, you know, 12 minutes, let's say, which I'm just looking back at some of the timings for this. And a lot of them, you know, got the time that they needed. You didn't need...
Notice that as well. It felt like a tighter AEW show where sometimes, I feel like sometimes they feel like 7 hours long, even though none of the matches are like terrible or anything, but they just seem to always go. But this one, you were having like what you would call like the Young Bucks versus Lucha Bros. That was only like 20 minutes, 22 minutes maximum. And that felt like it went forever because, not because that was bad, because the tension has been up so much. And I thought Penta died like 17 times.
I assume those were his children he was hugging afterwards. I can only imagine what they must have been thinking as he stumbled towards them with his mask half off, blood all over. Anyway, we'll get to that in due course. Let's start with the opening match. Not a match that we called to open the show, but looking back, a hell of a shout. Miro versus Eddie Kingston for the TNT Championship. The story of these first two matches is two men beat the crap out of each other for about 15 minutes. That's exactly what happened. You know, early on, back and forth exchanges from two really hard bastards. And then Kingston gets the advantage despite being the babyface by poking Miro in the eye and then hitting those machine gun chops that we were going to get used to throughout the night. Miro's chest, for Miro, let's not forget, looked red raw by the end of all this. Kingston comes off the apron, but Miro catches him and power slams him on the floor. This leads to Miro being in control and beating Eddie Kingston down for large parts of it. He eventually fights back, dodges an attack in the corner, shoulder tackles Miro to the floor. He goes for a dive, but Miro nails him with a right hand. Kingston then, as they're coming back in, catches Miro, hits the Saito suplex. And Miro doesn't want any part of this. At one point, Kingston, after this, goes for his spinning back fist, and Miro just bails to the outside. In the end, Miro attacks Kingston, Machka kick, calls for the game over, locks it on, but Kingston, with the crowd willing him on, just manages to make it to the ropes, hits a DDT, but in the midst of all this, Miro has ripped the turnbuckle pad off, and the referee has distracted himself by attempting to put that pad back on. So when Kingston hits that DDT, Miro's weakness, the official is late getting to the pinfall. That allows Miro to kick out. I thought that was a great near fall there. Kingston sets up for the pile driver. Can't get Miro up for it, though. Tries to throw him into that turnbuckle that's been exposed, but the official gets in the way. And in amongst all this, Miro hits one of those mule low blows, effectively a back kick whilst he's facing the referee, and hits his kick. 1, 2, 3. Miro retains, but I, for one, would love to see a rematch here, perhaps in a tennis stadium.
Yes, and going into this one, this was going to probably be one of the harder matches of the book, and I have a reason for this, because you don't want Miro to be broken down in any way, because Miro is being, since he was rebooted and he ejected Kip Sabian from his life, he's been unstoppable, and he's been what Miro... I don't know. I kind of liked a bit of the goofy mirror at the beginning. Like, I didn't mind it as much, but what he should have been all along, right? Mm. And here you've got Eddie Kingston, lovely little Edward. I mean, he's a big man, but you can't squash Edward like you have with everyone else, right? He needs to be sort of an imposing figure. And we've seen, and he's been built up as such, like with the matches he's had with John Moxley. Mm. He's, along with Penta, was the only other team, apart from Penta again later on in the evening, to beat the Young Bucks this year, going to like Kenny Omega, like the number one wrestler on AEW right now. So it was a weird one, and it was a level match, and it was almost exactly what it needed to be. And even though, and I'm quite happy with AEW now, I feel like they're getting used to having a bit more, not screwy finishes, but screwy business within matches that you can sort of like build off and have a talking point, rather than everything needing to be sort of like down the middle. There's no cheating. There's no sort of tomfoolery everywhere. Like, I don't mind a low blow in a match if it like makes sense, which it did here, because it was poetic justice to to get these nuts.
Redeem these nuts.
And I keep saying get these nuts, like get these hands. And also, you weren't sure if the turnbuckle spot was an accident for the first part either.
Yeah.
It was so well done. And bringing that all into that with the distractions, and it was... The referee, I can't remember the exact referee's name, but he, bless him, he got a lot of flack from the crowd when
I think it was Bryce Remsburg. Yeah, Remsburg. Dogs abuse.
And I mean, fair enough, as long as the abuse stops there. But like, bless him for missing a few things that he did, of course, because he had to. And even the spot where you thought Kingston might tap out and he didn't, because I don't think Kingston should tap out. I think getting kicked in the face several times is the way to put him down. But you look at Miro after that, like he definitely gave Miro, he made Miro work for it with that, as you said, that chest. And I think you couldn't have gone this, unless you did a DQ finish, you couldn't have gone anywhere else with this. And I thought both came out stronger than they went in.
Yeah. And it, like you say, the turnbuckle spot and the finish was just informed by Miro's desperation of, you know, he believes he's unstoppable and his record speaks to that, but he certainly got pushed right to his limit here by Kingston. And, you know, it was reflected on Rampage where he got put down there under DDT. He got, you know, was it, if Remsburg was in position, and like you say, it was a wonderful story to tell, even though he got horrendous a reaction from the crowd.
It,
maybe the title changes hands and Miro recognizes that if he tries to go toe-to-toe with Kingston now, exposed turnbuckle or not, it's not going to end well. So kicking the ball hooks and then finish the match. And like you say, they can just run it back in a few weeks. I'm not exactly sure when Arthur Ashe is, but I believe it's towards the end of September. There's certainly scope for that, and I, for one, in terms of, like you say, a screwy finish, we'll take this all day long rather than a DQ or a bloody count out or whatever it is.
Roll up.
Yeah, and the theme of this night continued with John Moxley versus Satoshi Kojima. I've got to hold my hands up and say I didn't really know a lot about Kojima, but in this match I didn't really need to, because out he comes, 50-year-old bloke. He bloody pops his pecs within the first couple of minutes, and he tries to be respectful at the beginning with Moxley, holds out his hand. Moxley just flips him off, and they just, yeah, they just chop each other. They hit each other as hard as they can. I think the thing that personified this match in terms of, you know, less desperation and more what harm can we do to each other in this, was the bit where they were both on the top rope biting each other's faces. Yeah. Kojima off the back of that hits a bloody superplex, apron DDT, another apron DDT. Moxley's arm got all busted up in the midst of all this. Kojima got a hell of a lot of offense here. Moxley goes to the paradigm shift, gets hit with a brain buster by Kojima. Eventually, the tide sort of turns back in Moxley's favor. He reverses a lariat into a German suplex, hits a whole load of lariats of his own. Goes to the paradigm shift again, but Kojima hits a left arm lariat and that cozy cutter of his for a double down. Moxley's trying to choke him out throughout all this, locks on the bulldog choke. Kojima has to reach the ropes. In the end, though, Moxley hits a headbutt, dodges a lariat, hits a paradigm shift, hits a second paradigm shift. He gets the victory. I mean, I want to know your thoughts on this, but more importantly, I probably want to know your thoughts on what came after. So very briefly, your thoughts on the match, Ben Roy.
Like you, I wasn't aware of Kojima before this match. And I was thinking of Metal Gear Solid all the way through because, you know, my beloved Hideo Kojima, just the only other Kojima I know. So I just pulled to that. But for a 50-year-old bloke going against John Moxley, he did well. Yeah. And this is what it needs to be in this. I'm going to say this a lot through this podcast, is like, they just beat the piss out of each other, and Moxley coming in with a GCW hoodie on sort of like set the tone of like the mood he was in and where he was in sort of like headspace. And these two just went at each other. It did, like, it's one of the short matches on the show. It didn't need to be that long. And it was just, I think it was a nice mix up and a change of pace after the TNT title match we just had. John Moxley went over with, his paradigm shift when he cranks it up and pulls someone straight down the head, you just know they're done. It's like he does it in such a way, he performs it off so well. It's just eliminating. But yes, we should move on to what happened afterwards, which was the whole setup for this in the first place, I think.
Yeah, like you say, I think these opening two matches were two very different kinds of brawling, but two very similar kinds of two men beat the piss out of each other. And that obviously summoned the spirit of and the embodiment of that sort of thing. Minoru Suzuki, he gets a huge reaction, especially from Moxley, who pulls a hell of a face in the ring. That's a meme for sure. Holy chance, of course. He comes down, takes off his jacket, squares up with Moxley. They trade forearms. Eventually, Suzuki hits a boot. Moxley tries for a lariat. Suzuki couldn't care less. Rear naked choke. Gotch-style pile driver on John Moxley. Stands over him, foot on his chest. We are getting these two, I believe, this week on Dynamite in the Cincinnati, Ohio, a homecoming edition of Dynamite. Sweet Jesus. I mean, the Forbidden Door has been blown off its hinges, hasn't it?
What a match to give away for free TV as well, because like for anyone who doesn't watch, hasn't watched Suzuki, you might have just seen him be on the sphere of influence like I have throughout the years. You just know he's a hard bastard. You just know that he's just going to destroy someone if he gets near them. And the way they sort of put him over in this end segment to this match, one, didn't make Moxley look weak because he was such an imposing figure. And I think the crowd sold it, the commentary sold it, and Moxley's face sold it. And two, it's great how they can build towards. We aren't just in the same old conventions that we've been going for what feels like 50 odd years now, where pay-per-views always have to be sort of like the blow off at the end of something, where we've had like one or two aspects of this pay-per-view which are going to be, have started new things and going to keep going on. And Suzuki just annihilated Moxley eventually. And I can't wait to see these two just beat the hell out of each other on Dynamite.
It's certainly not a sentence I ever thought I would write. Minoru Suzuki challenges John Moxley. And yet here we are. And what an exciting match that is going to be. Women's World titles on the line next. Britt Baker defending against Chris Statlander. You sort of alluded to this earlier, Ben Roy, in terms of the fact that we all kind of knew the result of this match. But it was a hell of an entertaining way to showcase it nonetheless. Baker goes for the DMD, signaling early on, and gets reversed into a self boop, I believe it's called, by Chris Statlander. Back and forth between these two, as you would expect. Some good, if not quite great, stuff, but towards the end, I thought they really kicked into gear. Baker gets the glove, signals for the lockjaw, but then Baker counters the Big Bang Theory as Chris Statlander tries to fight back, cradles her for a two count, flatline Statlander to the turnbuckles. They fight on the top rope, credits Chris Statlander, basically deadlifting Britt Baker for a superplex. Goes to the area 4-5-1, but Baker rolls out the way, goes for the lockjaw, but Statlander fights out and hits one of those electric chair face busters and a scissor kick for a near fall. Baker gets out to the floor. Statlander goes for that pendulum moonsault, but Baker just isn't there. She gets out of the way and Statlander just splats on the floor. Baker comes off the steps to hit a curb stomp, goes for the lockjaw as they get back in the ring, but Statlander tries to turn it into a spider crab. Baker kicks her way out, stomps in the corner. Baker climbs the ropes and hits a Pittsburgh sunrise, a possible sign of things to come, let's say. Curb stomp, near fall, great near fall, in fact, and decides, you know what, never mind all this. Let's go for the lockjaw, and she gets the submission victory, as we expected, but a hell of a sprint towards the end, Ben Roy.
Give me this match 6 months to a year down the line again, because this was never going to, obviously, we're never going to tip the belt off Britt Baker at this point. She's white hot. She's a white hot baby face, but also one of the biggest heels in the company. So it's so confusing, but it's so good at the same time. She can play all these angles. And yeah, like Statlander is a future AEW Women's World Champion, like for sure. And we missed out on quite a lot of her due to her injury, and now she's back. It was almost a blessing in disguise. She's been better than ever, and they're just. I think about this character that she's built, where she's an alien, but she's also So one tough cookie at the same time and just going head to head. And it's, I feel like we're now at a point with the women's matches and the women's world title where I feel like we're actually having proper programs and sort of like it not just being relegated to, oh, we need to defend this belt at this pay-per-view. And I'm feeling like we're bringing the women's division of AEW to a point where not that way. Where I feel like it should have been maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago almost. And this match just cemented it for me. And also one bit you didn't mention in your roundup there is we had an evolution of another character with Orange Cassidy pulling off his glasses and shouting. I think it was a get up or something like that.
Something like that. Firing up Statlander. Yeah.
Yeah. And that for a moment, like, what's going on here? And obviously he calmed back down afterwards, but that was... just that bit of shouting was a major part of the match. And also, we didn't really have any screwy business with the two outside, which was excellent at the same time, because you can almost guarantee, like, if this was booked in a different way, you could see this, well, we can't have either of them losing, so what if we just do a DQ and have the run-in and then we're sort of done? But no, we had a great contest between both of them. And again, like, I just couldn't have seen this going any other way, and I'm happy that it did go this way, and I don't think Statlander's been weakened whatsoever.
No. We're backstage. It's Andrade El Idolo. He's with Charlo Guerrero talking about Pac and his travel issues, saying it's not his fault. And Chavo said that Pac wasn't there because he's scared. The same thing happened with the Lucha Bros. And this Friday on Rampage, of course, those two will go head-to-head, and it's going to be no more excuses. And then we got... to the tag team championship match inside a bloody steel cage. I'm reliably informed it was Mexican rapper Muelas de Gallo, de Halo. Either way, it was an epic entrance for the Lucha Bros. Don Callis, Joy of Joys, was on commentary for the match. And we got, I mean, this is an incredibly high bar, but one of the best tag matches I've seen in AEW. I still think possibly... I prefer the Revolution match, but I do think I may have to go back and watch both of them side by side, because this was a very different kind of tag match compared to that. A lot more bloody, this one, but nevertheless, just absolutely sensational work from all four men. Bucks trying to escape the cage straight away in a match that I think they reiterated on commentary, you can only win by pinfall or submission, but whatever. Just... Penta catapulting Rey Fénix into the Bucks that early on told you where we were going to go. Fénix later on hit a step up Hurricane Rana on Nick, and Penta hit that diving ass kick, whatever that's called. I'm going to definitely miss a spot here. So I apologize if your favorite spot does not get mentioned, because if you haven't seen it already, go out of your way to go and watch this match. The Bucks hit an Indy Taker with a senton on both men. To get a near fall with a double count, basically. So Lucha Bros fight back after getting out of the way of a BTE trigger. Fénix goes for a crossbody, Bucks catch it, and they've just had enough at this point. Matt Jackson just kicks them both in the dick and then pulls the face, and he gets away with it with that sort of face. They hit more bang for your buck. They ripped at the Luchador's face masks, lawn dart Fénix into this steel cage, and then Brandon Cutler unveils a bag with something in it, which, fair play to him, he nails thrown over what looked like a huge cage first time. It's opened up to reveal one of their fancy Air Jordans with thumbtacks all over the bottom of it. Matt sets up to hit Rey Fénix with it, but Penta offers to take the bullet for him. Penta's already bleeding at this point. He's bleeding a lot worse after getting hit face first with it. They set up the BTE trigger, but then instead they super kick Rey Fénix with the thumbtack boot, hit the BT trigger on Penta. That looks like it's that. But Fénix at the last second, literally 2.99999, breaks up the fall to get a fantastic reaction. At this point, I realize Rey Fénix is piercing blood everywhere as well. Rey Fénix makes a jaw-dropping one-man comeback. Hurricane Rana's corkscrew kicks. He finally gets a hold of that boot and hits both of these bell ends with it. Fénix hits a black fire driver on Matt Jackson for a near fall. Then the two elder brothers of the teams face off, both hit to package pile drivers on the younger versions of their opponents. And then on Matt Jackson, hits a bloody top rope Canadian destroyer. Goodness me. Then after that, we have like a four-way exchange. There's chops, there's super kicks, there's kip-ups followed by another super kick. Everyone gets laid out. And again, in a sort of reverse of the breaking up of a near fall by the Lucha Bros earlier, this time Nick Jackson gets hit with a fear factor by the Lucha Bros and Matt breaks it up at the last second. Rey Fénix climbs the cage. Looks like he's going to do something. Maybe hit their mad finisher off the top of it. But Nick kicks Penta, climbs the cage, gets kicked off, falls down, and then Rey Fénix hits a bonkers crossbody off the top onto the three men. They hit their double team pile driver. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, as I mentioned, a bloodied Penta goes over and celebrates with his daughters, I assume. Regardless, oh, I needed a cold shower after watching this, Ben Roy.
I think this is probably the greatest tag team match in AEW history so far. Like, I certainly enjoyed it more than the Revolution match. It maybe just me, but I feel like the cage has been such a mysterious thing within AEW, and we've had some sort of like other cage-like box structures in our time in AEW, but we haven't really had a cage match since Cody and Wardlow about a million years ago, pre-pandemic. So having this back here, and it works so well because you don't want any of the Good Brothers coming on this, and I think all of us wanted the Lucha Bros to finally win. Like, it felt like this whole time having the Lucha Bros just not on the sidelines, but it's been 2 years, man, and for them to finally get this win like this, and in a way where this match was more so than any other box match recently, where it was a bit more believable, because there's only two spots I can think of where Nick Jackson took that Canadian destroyer and he was up within like, I think, 5 seconds, and then he dominated again. I was like, come on, man, like, stop this. And when the giant crossbody off the top rope, Penta took pretty much all of that, and then he yes. got back up in 2 seconds and then somehow killed
time for the pile driver.
They're the 2 points I'm like, what? They didn't make sense to me, but for the rest, flawless execution of just, I thought the Young Bucks had this within the first 5 minutes, and then they were playing with their food, and then they couldn't put their food away, and then their food came back and destroyed them. And when you have introductions of, like, say, the thumbtack super kick Air Jordan's shoe, and Penta at this point, is, I think, even his face paint is mixed with the blood, and his mask's half ripped open, so it looks like his actual face is being ripped open, and he's trying to get blood out of his way so he can breathe. And the whole time Rey Fénix is just flying about and then using the cage to avoid standard Nick Jackson like offense, and in interesting ways, and having them to battle on the side like at least 2 or 3 times, and really using the cage for full effect. And thank God they needed the one high spot, and it was a very protected high spot. It just, this cage match is going to be the benchmark for a cage match going forward. I can't think of a cage match in wrestling for the longest time that had this much gravitas and was such a sort of like spectacle to and special. And I look back and this feels like almost like a Hell in the Cell sort of state. Like, their cage is like the Hell in the Cell now for AEW, where it sort of like builds up, and this is now where you end, Sank. And 300 odd days later, the Young Bucks have finally dropped the straps, and I feel like it's the right time, because we need to move them on to more like evil sort of leaders within AEW as they get thwarted by people that we'll mention later. But this match, just one of those ones where it's just in your veins for 20 solid minutes and you can't pull away, and you really, I could gush about this the whole time, but Penta and Rey Fénix did an excellent job, so did the Young Bucks, and I am so happy with this result. And what a match.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, let's move on to the Women's Casino Battle Royale. Look, I'm not going to try and sugarcoat this. This was probably, aside from the joke a bit, my least favorite part of this pay-per-view. We've talked time and time and time again on these podcasts about how much I really kind of dislike, and we all do, this Casino Battle Royale format. And if I'm honest, there were spots I really enjoyed, like Jade Cargill, maybe because I'm biased, I'm a Jade Cargill fan, press slamming Layla Hirsch to the outside. But for me, this match only really got going when we got to the Joker. So I'm just going to jump there, if that's all right with you, yeah. Ben Roy, because the Joker was one Ruby Soho, as we'd all hoped. The former Ruby Riott came out last. She got chance and just soaked it all in. And there was a lovely glint in her eyes. She walked down to the ring. She comes down. She's fighting off immediately. Jade Cargill, Nyla Rose, all those sorts of people. Then she gets laid out to allow some other people to have some moments in there. Tay Conti, Penelope Ford are brawling. Jade Cargill eliminates Red Velvet, and then Nyla Rose eliminates Jade Cargill. Tay Conti eliminates Penelope Ford, but then gets eliminated by Nyla Rose. So the final three are Thunder Rosa, Nyla Rose, and of course, Ruby Soho. The two smaller women go after the giant that is Nyla Rose. She fights them off. She hits a tree slam. She hits a bloody Samoan drop. But as she goes to attack Thunder Rosa, she gets eliminated using her own momentum against her to put it down to Thunder Rosa and Ruby Soho. They fight. They go exchange moves in the ring, and then they fight onto the apron. And it's that panic of people trying to yank each other off or just hit one big move. Soho tries to suplex Rosa. Rosa tries to Death Valley driver Ruby Soho. In the end, though, Rosa gets sent into the turnbuckle and hits, I think, what used to be the Riot kick, a sort of version of that, effectively, to knock to knock Thunder Rosa off the apron. Not only is Ruby Soho all elite, Ben Roy, but she is also now the number one contender.
The number one contender, which we'll probably have in, is it Ash's? Arthur Ashe's, like, I would love for that match to be there. So my prediction, this is one of the only predictions I think I got wrong. I had Thunder Rosa because in the past, I don't think the Jokers have ever really gone over it in the way that I would have liked. But in this one, it was booked to perfection here. Like, Ruby Soho is going to jump straight ahead of the line. And this is like, at least with this match, the format is very weird and very confused. Like, not very confusing, but it's so sort of like hodgepodge where, and now it's the diamonds, but I don't think they should have at least on the screen who's in what bracket before they come out and give each wrestler like at least more than 5 seconds to sort of show their face and show them rather than the match. And it felt like a, do we show them, do we not? And then there was so many mixtures of that throughout the match. And when we finally got to the end, as you say, when it started to come together, it just worked, man. And Ruby Soho, the only work I've ever seen her in was as Ruby Riott in WWE. And I don't think she got like a fair shot there. So I'm happy to see her again jump ahead of the queue with this stipulation and be what will no doubt be an excellent contest for Britt Baker. And in a smart way, hold off Thunder Rosa, because I feel like that will be the nuclear feud for the Britt Baker title run. And that may be a way to, that may be the end of her title run when we finally get back to that, as we've seen with their Lights Out match before and the rivalry them two have had. But I wouldn't have gone any other way looking back at it now. And just what a way to bring Ruby Soho in. And it's so much better than when we had Leo Rush as the Joker. What was it? Double or Nothing, when he just waved and was destroyed instantly. Sort of.
Yes.
So it one of the weaker matches on the show for sure. But if you were to chop off most of it and have, like, say, the last 5 minutes, excellent.
Exactly. Yeah, a hell of a springboard for Soho, and great to see her just back enjoying wrestling again. Let's get on to the final fight that came next. It was MJF versus Chris Jericho, and MJF up to his old tricks. We got an old classic Jericho countdown to Jericho's last match, because that was part of MJF's entrance. Jericho's entrance featured the Fozzy guitarist doing his best Boogs impression to bring Jericho to the ring, and the fans can sing all the lyrics, possibly for the final time, because of course, if Jericho lost this, he will never be allowed to wrestle in AEW again. Early on, it's quite amused by this, they brought into the crowd, Jericho grabbed like a pole thing, just twatted MJF with it. I was like,
they're pretty heavy.
Yeah, that A, that could really mess him up pretty badly, and B, guess we're just letting that go now. Okay, but, you know, it's what it is between these two. It's a blood feud. I can understand the referee giving it some leeway. MJF fights back by trapping Jericho in the ring skirt, attacking his arm. Obviously, that's what he's going for, to get his submission on later on. MJF knows how to piss off a crowd. That includes just straight up flipping it off and doing the flare strut and then humping the air, effectively. He eventually guillotines Jericho over the ropes and hits a brilliant heat seeker to leave Jericho almost getting counted out. Just made it in at the last second. Otherwise, what a unsatisfactory end to his wrestling career that would be. They go out to the floor. MJF went for a bloody moonsault. What's he doing? Anyway, Jericho dodges it, powerbombs MJF onto the ring corner, and MJF is selling his back as this match goes on with real visceral screams. Jericho comes off the top, gets hit with his own code breaker by MJF for a near fall. Jericho goes to the walls. MJF fights out of it, but Jericho hits a lion salt for a near fall. Jericho also eventually, as they are fighting on the top rope, hits a diving code breaker on MJF for a near fall. Out comes Wardlow, but Jake Hager immediately attacks him, and they brawl out with referees, sending them off. In the midst of all this, that distracts the referee. That allows MJF to use Floyd the Bat, hit the Judas effect. 1, 2, 3. MJF wins. Chris Jericho can never wrestle again. Or can he? Because as MJF celebrates and the crowd rain down boos, a referee who'd come to deal with Wardlow and Hager tells, I believe it was Aubrey who was refereeing, informs Aubrey that she missed the foot on the ropes. So to restart the match. Right, I've got an issue here, Benroy. Either we do that and referees can change their decision, or the referee's decision is final, which means either for me, Benroy, MJF's the world champion, because if you're allowed to change your decision, Moxley used an illegal move, or you're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to change your decision, in which case Chris Jericho shouldn't wrestle again. Either way, MJF has been screwed yet again by this company. Yes, the match restarts. Jericho immediately rolls him up. Near fall, MJF gets his submission on Chris Jericho, but Chris Jericho reverses it, rolls him up, and puts him in the walls of Jericho, torturing his back, sits down on it. MJF submits. Chris Jericho is allowed to wrestle again, even though he probably shouldn't have done, but a great story being told here.
Yeah, a great story being told here in this respect, but if we look at the greater Pinnacle versus Inner Circle feud, I one of the worst things I think has been on AWTV, in my opinion, where it's just not in the work, but in how confusing it's been, how up and down and how stop and start and like
back to front.
Yeah, and their match on Dynamite, there was I was listening. There was not a single mention of the Inner Circle or the Pinnacle once on commentary, anything like that, or the build-up. And there wasn't here either until they're like, oh, remember Wardlow exists. And Jake Hager's just respawned. He's just been like glitched out somewhere for the past couple of months. But the match itself, excellent, but I just couldn't. I hate stipulations where you can tell, well, this is just ruin the match now, because why would Jericho go to commentary at the point when AEW is at its highest and when he can have another match with CM Punk, which will happen, and when he can have a match with Daniel Bryan, which you probably want to do. I couldn't take myself out of that wrestling booking brain where you can see everything else going on around you. I don't know if you've ever seen that film Hackers, where they're just sitting there, all the numbers are flying around. I'm like, well, this can't happen because of that, and that can't happen because of that. And the way they did the finish this match, sure, I mean, I don't think it's destroyed MJF. He's won quite a lot of matches over Jericho, and it almost was like the sort of like the labors of Jericho were pointless if we got to this point anyway. I feel like this should have just been the last labor of Jericho and got here in that respect, maybe. But yeah, the match itself, I thought it was solid. I was worked totally by that entrance, and I thought that was hilarious. I'm looking forward to seeing how they come out of this on Dynamite, and I hope this is it. I hope we don't have any more of this. It's been 2 years now, almost. And I'm kind of like, I'm sorry if I seem overwhelmingly negative on this, but I couldn't get that out of my brain. And I need this to be done. I need them to go their own ways. But I would have probably, I would have had Jericho being like murked with more baseball bats to the head or something like that, because we kind of need space between these two now. It's been a bit too long. And I'm going to stop going on about this match because I can't get that out of my head.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think these two have, you know, have kept each other busy for the better part of a year. And yeah, look, Jericho's got his win back now. MJF's got his ready-made excuse. Not an excuse, justifiable excuse.
Yeah. Screwed over.
Company, man. Yeah, move them on to the next thing. One of which may feature CM Punk, because he came next. He fought Darby Allin. I'm just looking at Ben Roy's face, who's been a lifelong CM Punk fan, and I sense that he rather enjoyed this. There was welcome back chance, yes. You know. It wasn't even the need of a you still got it, because, yeah, I mean, he didn't have his classic trunks on. He had sort of different gear, which distracted me initially, but nevertheless, he hasn't missed a step, really. Immediately going
new gear got me as well.
Yeah. Immediately going into sort of technical wrestling showcase the fact that he has still got it, even if the crowd doesn't feel the need to remind him of that, which is quite right. Punk hits a scoop slam, catches Darby Allin in a position early on for a GTS, and Allin dives to the outside and realizes maybe what he's got himself in for. Darby Allin gets some offense back in, though, hits a step up arm drag, coffin splash in the corner as he goes. For a hammer throw, though, Punk reverses it. And oh my God, I thought Darby Allin had broken his spine. He sends Darby Allin not into the turnbuckle. You know, they normally do it and they go and they post themselves on their shoulder. Yeah, imagine that. But he's just flying and turning and his back bends around the post. Darby Allin puts himself through stuff that would put me down for the rest of the bloody year. Anyway, he immediately comes back from that. Hits one of these over-the-top stunner things that he manages to do, starts his comeback, coffin splash, gets a cradle for a two count, another cradle, and gets a code red in amongst that for another near fall. Punk nails him with the GTS as they have another exchange, but Darby Allin spills out the ring. Oh, the chance may have gone. Punk almost accepts a count-out victory, but Darby Allin just gets in. Punk in control now, hits the knees in the corner, that short arm clothesline of his, calls for a GTS, but Allin, as he's picked up, nails him with elbows from the top, and that means Punk goes to the outside, and Darby Allin hits him with his speeding bullet tope, whatever you want to call it, through the ropes. and hits a flipping senton off the top rope all the way to the outside. Sets up for a coffin drop, goes for it, and that is when Punk just sits up, taunts him, almost gets caught by Darby Allin cradling him, just rolling him up as Punk sat there feeling very proud of himself. Another cradle, wrapping all Punk's legs up, gets another near fall. Punk hits a single leg drop kick, gets him up, finally hits another GTS as Darby Allin was on his shoulders and gets the victory. Post-match, Sting comes down, shakes Punk's hand, who subsequently then shakes Darby Allin's hand. This is everything I needed from this match and more.
Yeah, I mean, I was happy there was no sort of like schmoz at the end. I was waiting for 2.0 to run in for the 74th time this week, but thankfully they didn't. And when Sting took Darby back, he's like, it's like a dad finding his drunk son on a night out. And he's like, come on, son. Even though this might be the biggest straight edge main event match ever. I'm sorry, just stealing that from you there. I can't exactly do the Wilbourn voice, but it could have been really weird, right? But it wasn't in the end. And it felt normal to us, CM Punk wrestling. And we needed to get away. I mean, he's super special. And he's one of my personal all-time favorites, I'd say. But it felt like he was just in a match again, but not in a bad way. And it was nice to get used to him into the ring and take some offense from Darby Allin to some of the spots like the GTS, and Darby Allin just like bouncing out of the ring was excellent. And the setup channeling a big match Mark Calloway in that respect. And I wasn't expecting that. And then those sort of spots, you're like, well, God, a little 1 second layer and that in your face ruined. Sorry, good old Cookie Monster. But yeah, it was just, also, the amount of face paint and obviously body paint that Darby had on worked to the favor here.
Yeah.
Really sort of like just covered them both in it and sort of like darkened Punk's wrist tape, which I'm glad he brought back up, by the way. I was scared that he might not go back that route, but it just had Punk back the way we needed it. And it's so nice to have Punk back, but not just to listen to cult personality for 10 minutes, even though I could listen to that. I could do that forever. It's fine. Yeah. But it was him in a match again. And it kicked off one of the three main events of the evening. It kicked off the main events. And it just, because next, obviously we had one of the biggest matches in AEW history, but the CM Punk moment is what it needs to be. And I'm glad no one ran in. I'm glad there was no sort of like hard luck. I don't know now if we then have Darby sort of like not turn heel or Punk get a bit sour and then they have a bit more of a blood match next time, or we move on to something else fresh. Either way, I would like to sort of get Punk in the ring again soon, rather than just like him then sort of come down to the ring and chat for the next sort of like 4 weeks, if that makes sense.
Yes, exactly. Very excited to see what he does next and who he works with next. But
I should say as well, I'm sad that we didn't get any Pepsi Plunge. I was waiting for the Pepsi, and a move that was made illegal in WWE because it was basically a pedigree of the top rope. But now there isn't any sort of Paul Hunter Hurst Helmsley Levesque around. We should have had the Pepsi Plunge. That would be my only critique.
Yes, they'll maybe saving that for hopefully for down the road a little bit later on. But yeah, in terms of a return match, not much more you could ask for. Right, never mind CM Punk's in-ring return or Bryan Danielson or Adam Cole or Ruby Soho or Minoru Suzuki. Let's talk about the real main event, the big takeaway from this.
Yes.
And that was no more BS. Oh, Marshall. Oh my God, I was so happy this just went 3 minutes. Like they did all they needed to do. Paul White murdered Aaron Solo and Nick Comoro before the match even started. Rips open QT Marshall's jacket. Silences the crowd so we can hear those massive chops of his. QT gets a tiny bit of offense in, informed by the hit bollocks that they've been going on about. Hits a drop kick. But Paul White recovers. Huge back body drop as QT Marshall goes for a running diamond cutter, I believe. Takes out Aaron Solo off the top rope and just chops him, draping him over the ropes. Then hits a running crossbody on Comoroto. Chokes. Oh, no. He hits a a huge KO punch on Nick Comoroto, who doesn't know where he is, but is still standing in amongst all this, and then hits QT Marshall with the choke slam for the victory. 3 minutes, bish, bash, bosh.
No BS in this match. We were straight to the point when QT Marshall got picked. Oh God, I said picture then. I could get sued. Paul White down to one knee. I thought, here we go. This is going to be a 15-minute classic. It's going to go longer than the CM Punk match. But thank God, Paul White got back up and just destroyed the rest of them. I'm curious to where this goes. If this is just now, we can forget about this and
please,
good old Tony Soprano, QT Marshall can go on to do something else. Just go away for a bit, please. Maybe, please. And if this has to go anywhere else, then it has to be for a go-go to bring his knockout punch to be Paul White. And I think everyone's going to accidentally call him Big Show for the rest of the time. God damn it. But yeah, unless QT Marshall is now just going to go to sleep for a bit, just go away now and let Paul White go back to the desk, or bring a go-go in and let's have a go-go sort of like squash Paul White in some respect. But now we come out of this, he's undefeated. CM Punk's undefeated. There's going to have to be a grudge match here. And I don't care about anyone else in this company right now. Whoever wins that match could be, you know, BS Paul White. Then gets that should have a number one. It should have a match against Kenny Omega. When are we going to get No BS Paul White versus Kenny Omega for the World AEW Championship?
I can tell Sidgwick is just trying to get himself off to sleep after working all night. Go read his ups and downs article at whatculture.com. Give him some support. I know we will be getting their thoughts, of course, in the coming days on this pay per view, naturally. But imagine he's just finally getting himself off to sleep. Just, oh, what a night it was. And then he's just, what's wrong, dear? I don't know. Something. I felt a disturbance in the force.
Ben Roy said something again. Damn him.
Right. In terms of a perfect sort of little amuse-bouche before the main event, this was perfect. We also got a promo from Moxley cutting down Minoru Suzuki, saying fighting each other is the best drug in the world. Called him a bully, welcomed him to the jungle. And Malakai Black, who of course is going to be facing Dustin Rhodes, just baits him that little bit more. He wants Dustin to be as angry as possible because that makes him more predictable, more likely to slip up. And he reminds him all the horrible things he's done, including murdering his little brother, Cody, as if we needed selling on this really exciting match off the back of Rampage last week, of course, to look forward to. Right, main event time, Kenny Omega versus Christian Cage. Again, a surreal match in terms of the fact that we went in for another world title match going, I think the champion retains in quite straightforward fashion here. There will be some shenanigans, but yeah, I thought they did a great match. I think I prefer, maybe because of the result possibly more than anything, I think I prefer their Impact world title match from Rampage. But for a match that, you know, if you'd have told me 6 weeks ago this was going to main event the pay-per-view, you aren't getting Hangman Page, Adam, you're getting Christian versus Kenny Omega. Thought they did a hell of a job. And at the end of the day, they could have put on one of the greatest world title matches ever, and still people would be talking about what came afterwards. But let's talk match first, Ben Roy. Immediately, Kenny Omega goes for a V-trigger. Christian reverses it into a kill switch, but Omega fights out. They fight out to the outside. Christian throws Omega into the barricade and hits that top rope double fist thing on the floor. Kenny Omega gets control of Christian. Don Callis takes the referee. So he just drapes a table, but not folded out, just the back of a table, drapes it over Christian, running double stomp over the top of it. They set up another table, but Christian counters a suplex that Kenny Omega was going for to try and put him through a second table. I suppose the first one wasn't being him put through it, but the table were being broken, I think. Regardless, Christian suplexes Omega on the floor. I really like the bit where Omega goes for a moonsault off the barricade, but slips. And he's such a consummate pro, he just does the old no, readjusts, nails a perfect one off the back of that. He is targeting Christian's head and neck after this. Elbow strikes, leg lariats, bloody V-triggers all over the place, and snapdragon suplexes especially off the back of when Christian flipped him off as he was setting up for another V-trigger. Then they are fighting on the apron. Omega is desperately trying to put Christian through that table they set up earlier on. He goes for the one-winged angel. Christian fights out of it and spears Omega off the apron through the table on the floor. Christian then gets Omega back in the ring, spears him in the back, spears him in the front, and gets a great near fall off the back of that. Goes for the frog splash. Omega gets out of the way of it, though. Lots more V-triggers here with Christian just getting absolutely nailed here, including a ripcord V-trigger to just send him down. He gets him in the submission hold, the cloverleaf submission, but Don Callis calls out the Good Brothers to come and interfere. Christian goes to deal with them, realizes Omega's coming for him, gets out of the way, so Omega V-triggers Gallows. He hits the kill switch, another really good near fall here that really got the crowd involved. Don Callis, Chris gets in the ring. Christian chases him off, goes for a top rope kill switch, but Omega gouges his eyes and it's a effectively super one winged angel. Yet no one's kicking out of that one, are they, Ben Roy?
No, and I feel like he put over Christian in a way for, like, we didn't even get the threat of a normal one winged angel. It took the super one winged angel to sort of like take him down. And this match, it just shows how to use legends and sort of like more seasoned veterans that are coming from Titan Towers. And in a way, like, going into this, everyone was, I feel like everyone around AEW was sort of like not deflated, but sort of like apprehensive after we had sort of Hangman Page sacrificed on the altar. Because obviously most of us know that he's going to look after his new child, which will be born very soon. Mm-hmm. But for this match, Christian and Kenny Omega, I agree. I think the first one was better, but I think because that was more of I think that's probably down to Rampage being so fresh and new, and obviously that was an hour show, and those bang out fly by, where this had to follow No BS Paul White, and it's really hard to do that. And but they did it, and there wasn't as much when we had the Good Brothers coming out. I groaned to myself as I was sort of like being taken away into the land of Nod, because I was like, well, here we go, we're just gonna have a bunch of people coming in to interfere now, and then Christian's gonna lose. But I would still say we had a pretty genuine contest for the most part, and Kenny and Christian gave each other exactly what they everything they had, and it went over the right way. I don't think no way in a million years should Christian have ever won this match.
No,
and it was weird because it's like not an underwhelming main event, but it was almost sort of like placed in a way. If it was a Hangman Page and then what happened next, I think it felt a bit weird, but because it was Christian and what happened next, it was almost perfectly crafted and sort of like luring us in for what was the nuclear ending to this pay-per-view and something that just rushed adrenaline through. I'm pretty sure everyone who was watching this made it very hard to sleep and caused Vince McMahon to Google some things like, why isn't Goldberg as over as these tiny little men?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they worked it in a way where they knew that they were always going to be overshadowed by what came afterwards. And yet, that finish will still live long in the memory, like you say. And it doesn't half make Christian look good that his first defeat comes because of a super one-winged angel. But yeah, post-match, out come the Young Bucks to celebrate. And they all, in celebration, beat down Christian Cage. Of course, Jurassic Express run out to make the save, but Numbers Game catches up to them. Kenny Omega gets on the mic. There is already yes chance going on a lot here. Says nobody is on his level. The only people that would ever have had a chance to beat him either aren't here, are retired, or are already dead. The lights go out and Bryan Danielson does not come out. Instead, Adam Cole is All Elite. He comes out. He gets an amazing reaction. He's so fucking cool. Ben, I wish I could be an ounce of the cool that Adam Cole is. He comes out. Everyone does the Adam Cole Bebe thing. He faces off with the Young Bucks, with Kenny Omega, and it looks like they're going to go at it when he just super kicks Jungle Boy. They embrace. There's everyone having a lovely cuddle and a kiss. because they're best friends. Cole gets on the mic, story time with Adam Cole, talks about the Elite being the most dominant faction in the history of this business. And yeah, of course he wasn't going to fight with these guys. They're his best friends. So Omega decides, well, there we go. We've had enough surprises for one night. Does his whole goodbye and good night. But before he can finish, Flight of the Valkyries plays and out comes, I'll get this right, not Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. And the roof, if it hasn't already, comes off this place. He comes down to the ring. He aligns himself with Christian, with Jurassic Express, basically against the Elite. There's a big old brawl, loads of yes kicks to deafening yes chants from the crowd. And he finishes with a running knee on Nick Jackson to stand tall with his new friends as the Elite bail and the show goes off the air. Oh, like you say, I'm surprised anyone managed to get some sleep after this.
I'm in the points of my midday crash now, but I think it's not as severe because I'm still feeding off how electric that was. And when Adam Cole came out, it was really, it was like, oh, but it's always like, yes, because get him away from whatever NXT is becoming, sort of like Barney's playtime with all this, like the weird colors and stuff. I feel like it's going to be on CBB soon or something like that over here in the UK. But getting Adam Cole away from that and finally, I'm just stealing this from Mark Hanflet, finally donning black and gold and looking cool about it. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, that he was one of the key instruments in the Wednesday Night War of NXT having any ground in my opinion. And he's one of the only people to sort of like him and the Undisputed Era were just such a faction and such a movement. But when that all sort of fell apart, you just could never imagine him on the main roster. Especially not in 2021 when Johnny Ace and Bruce Pritchard have to sort of like back up old Vincent McMahon. And it's going to just be, well, what if we shaved his back or something like the FTR? Let's bring back that storyline. But because you would have seen him standing toe-to-toe with Roman Reigns and Vince going, ha, pow. Maybe if you get some heels on, maybe you can be as tall as Roman. But yeah, that Adam Cole spot was excellently done. And we should have noticed straight away the tunnel he came out of to realize he was like Punk did that earlier is when he was leaving like playing the crowd, what tunnel should we go through? And then when we get to Daniel Bryan and we have the Flight of the Valkyries, like, wow. But then some butt rock. And I was like, well, this beat that's going on at the moment, I'm not quite sure what's going down. Maybe AW aren't that sort of like shy from changing themes on the fly. Mm-hmm. So I hope we get that tweaked because it's a bit like, well, it's not really that epic, but I that's the very tiniest of complaints because I was losing my mind sitting up just watching Bryan Danielson. Look, we have to get it right because poor JR, after 5 hours of calling matches, got it instantly right. Bless him, and just smashed it out of the park. And I feel like we got one of those classic it's Austin, like almost calls from JR, because I don't know if he was unaware of it, because I know he doesn't like to know the match results, but he felt he was bringing over how we all felt. And see Bryan Danielson come in and almost single-handedly take down the Elite and defend Jurassic Express and Christian, I just don't know where this will go next. And do we have another big faction warfare with these lot? Yes, maybe. But also, Bryan Danielson's got to win some matches first. And how I'm glad that we've kept CM Punk away from Kenny Omega, but I don't think you could have had all these people come in and not keep any of them away from Kenny Omega. So they've done the right one here. And I just need to see Daniel Bryan get, wherever we call it, the LaBelle lock, the yes lock, the crossface on Kenny Omega, see what goes down there. AEW continues to become more powerful than I could possibly imagine. I don't know where he goes from here. Who do we get next? Do we get Tom Cohen and get him with Christian and just bring back that lovely little team? But on a serious note, this was probably the only thing that could have followed No BS Paul White, and it did, and it smashed out of the park.
Yes, it was just ridiculous of people saying when Cole came out, it was like, oh my God, we're guessing both. Like, Ambassador, you are spoiling us on a night where we've already got Ruby Soho and bloody Minoru Suzuki and new tag champs. Hence why people are talking about this being, you know, one of the best pay-per-views ever. Just in terms of like influencing my opinion of this show, I always say that often it's the last thing I remember that makes me, you know, judge it good or bad. So if something fantastic happens, I almost forget if there's been some bad stuff. I don't think there was much bad stuff on this show. There was lulls, but it wasn't outright bad in any point. But like you say, a very exciting time to be a wrestling fan right now and a thrilling week to look forward to. We will keep you posted on all the developments with it, but what a show, finally, as we conclude here, Ben Roy.
Yeah, I was skeptical going in for a little bit because I said I felt like a few of these matches were just sort of like happening, even down to the tag match where I felt like they almost could have been more build, but then as we know, there's history between the Lucha Bros and the Young Bucks. Eddie Kingston and Miro did exactly what they needed to bring out there. And we have so much not finishing this pay-per-view, but carrying on.
Mm.
And I'm looking forward to that. And Full Gear isn't that long away either. So,
and it's on a Saturday.
Oh, God, yes.
Thank Christ. Full Gear is
on a Saturday. Love it. Don't have to wake up at any old time on a Sunday. Just going to sleep through that whole day. Oh, Full Gear on a Saturday. Bring him back. Thank you, UFC. I mean, real fighting's a bit, but you know, thank you for this. And who do we get next? Who's going to come through the door next? Are we going to have, I just got, when's Great Khali debuting? That's what I want to know. But the thing is, this pay for you, it's surely better than last year's All Out. Mm. And I just can't bring it into words. I think even losing the Andrade Pack match helped it in a way to keep it even more tighter. I'm looking forward to seeing that on Rampage, but I need to see what Brian Danielson does next. I need to see what CM Punk's got up for his sleeve next. I want to see where Miro and Kingston go from here. I want to see the Lucha Bros and just cry in joy for them once more. And I can't wait. I just can't wait to see more AEW programming. So I'm just going to think about that now.
The most ringing endorsement you can give them. But let us know your thoughts on what happens next and your thoughts on this pay-per-view on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Ben Roy at
Ben Roy Turner.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. All the fallout from this, of course, in the next few days. And I will be getting the Dudley Boys' thoughts on it, hopefully tomorrow, if they have recovered from a hell of a night. But this has been the AEW All Out Review. My thanks to Ben Roy Tenner. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.